happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
The most successful team in the history of professional sports. Starting the new millennium, the New York Yankees are once again world champions.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Yeah, 203 McMonagle here with you. 877-337-6666. We opened it up a little bit of playoff at the Garden. We got the Knicks taking down the Sixers in game one. The Rangers taking care of business rather easily. I mean, it was a bit of a tough game to watch. It was a bit of a boring game. The opening period had a bunch of penalties. Everybody, my Twitter was filled with, let them play. Would you let them play? It's playoff hockey. Let them play. And it's hard not to feel that way watching all these dumb, dopey penalties. And then the Rangers did all their scoring in a couple of minutes in the second period for the most part. And they just can't score. I don't see how Washington keeps up in this series. I just don't see it. The Islanders will play tonight. The Knicks will play tonight. The Islanders coming off a tough loss to Carolina in game one. They look to even the series. And the Knicks will look to take a 2-0 lead against the 76ers, hoping that obviously Jalen Brunson plays better and the bench continues to do what they do. Again, this is an amazing stat to me. An amazing stat. Listen to the plus-minus numbers. And I think plus minus is a good. I mean, it's how the team performs while you're on the court. I think it's an underrated statistic. Every single one of the starting five for the Knicks were a minus in the game to whatever level, varying levels. All five minus. The bench. Bogdanovich was plus 27. Mitchell Robinson was plus 20, and Deuce McBride was plus 37. I mean, that's the game. That's the game. When the starting five was on the floor, the Sixers were better. When the bench was out there, the Knicks were better. I mean, their role players won them this game. Their role players. And you got to give it to, I mean, I don't want to get too ahead of myself like the crowd was outside of the Garden at the end of the game, but you got to give it, I mean, as the list of, let me get the list again, as the list of coaching, coach of the year candidates came out in the NBA, and Thibodeau is not on it. I'm trying to get the list now. I'll get to it in a second. If you can get me that list, Mike, sorry. As he's not one of the finalists for Coach of the Year, he's done an incredible job with this team. And Leon Rose, I mean, we still got plenty of games to play. But when you look at what they've done here, when you look at what the Ochi trade did, and for this team to be without Julius Randle, who, by the way, I don't know how you watch that game and not think they'd be better off. This is exactly why you want him in this game, in case Brunson doesn't have it. And they're going to play tougher competition than a banged-up Embiid-led Philadelphia 76ers team. Sure, I think they'll get through the first round. But it's going to get tougher. And you would love to have that secondary score. So I've always thought it was a bit silly. I still think it's silly. They would be better with Julius Randle. But they're still good enough. They're still good enough to get to an Eastern Conference final. And that's a remarkable job from Leon Rose. It's a remarkable job from the head coach in Thibodeau. He's done an incredible job. And it's so fun to watch. And the bench, whether Bogdanovich trade, who it didn't happen immediately the way the OG trade, which completely transformed the team. If you go back to that moment, that's really where it took off for me. In January, when they make the OG trade, this whole thing changed. All right, the Knicks were a good team. We expected them to be just as good or better than last year. All right, the over-under was 45. Thank you. And then OG came here. And still, like, prior to that, the starting five was a little, you know, it just didn't gel right. With RJ Barrett in there, it didn't vibe. It didn't fit. You had two guys who needed the ball to have their game translate. Randall needs the ball. Barrett needs the ball. And the two of them on the floor at the same time, it just never felt right. You know, quickly would come in as that's the leader of that second unit, and it would almost feel like, yeah, they didn't have as much talent, but that second unit vibed better. There was more of a flow on offense. It seemed more cohesive. And that all changed in January with the trade that initially was mocked by many and just, you know, despised by many Knicks fans. In fact, when I say mocked, I remember a certain former program director who is now a afternoon drive host in Philadelphia mocking the trade, saying, great, now you can win two games in the first round of the playoffs. Something along those lines. And yet it transformed the whole team. And here we are, without Randall, with bench players like Bogdanovich, Deuce McBride, who, let's be honest, who thought anything of Deuce McBride? What, he scored 3 points in the playoffs last year. He was a flawed offensive player with some defensive hustle. And they turned him into a player who can change a playoff game. Who's probably the best option to guard Maxi in this series and save the game for them offensively with 5 3-pointers. That's what he's developed into under Tibbs. It's been really as fun as it gets. And I know there's been other good teams. I know, obviously, the Jason Kidd and Carmelo Anthony team that won 50 games had their moments. Linsanity, I don't think that was the same year, obviously, but you know what I'm saying. They had their moments with Anthony. None of it was like this. None of it felt like this. None of it tasted like this. None of it felt like this. This team is special. This team is special, and it feels that way watching it, and it's a pleasure. And you got guys like Allen Houston and Sprewell and John Starks and Larry Johnson, all the games, and it harkens back to those teams. It feels like those teams. Deuce McBride, you know, hitting 5 threes feels a little bit like John Starks. It has that feeling. The toughness, the grittiness. I mean, Hart could absolutely play on those 90s teams. He was built to play on those 90s teams. And it's been a long time coming. And we're ready for game two tonight. And I feel about as good about this series, about their future, about anything as I had in a long time. 877-337-6666. Kevin in Hartford. What's up, Kev?
Good morning, Chris.
Good morning. How are we doing?
I'm doing all right. Thank you for being there doing what you do. So it makes what I got to do all that much easier.
Oh,
so
thank you, buddy. Thank you for calling in.
And then, all right, let's get to it. This Knicks team, all right, I used to love those 90s Knicks teams. We were about the same age, so I used to love those 90s Knicks teams growing up. And I got away from the NBA for a long time because the Knicks were so horrible. And then slowly but surely, I find myself gravitating back.
Yeah, honestly, Kev, I don't think you're alone. I think a lot. I mean, I felt it too, on some level, where it was just you get beaten down by being, I mean, not just bad but awful for decades. I mean,
well, then all that garbage, you know. Oh my God, and those bad teams, like even with Carmelo Anthony, those, you know, we had one good season, you know. It was just so horrible. But this team, like you were just saying, I feel like I'm watching that Larry Johnson, that John Starks, you know, those tough, gritty, never won a championship, but hardcore good Knick teams, you know, that plays defense, you know, and has secondary players. And then on to another point. You people that are Yankees fans or so-called Yankees fans that are showing up at the stadium and booing Aaron Judge, shame on you.
That's right.
Shame on you.
Shame.
All right? Shame. Shame on you. The guy carried this team. Yes, Soto has come in, and Soto has changed the dynamic of this team, changed the dynamic of the lineup, and it shows. Like you were saying earlier, is our five starting pitchers pitching to a tune of a 3.5 ERA average between the five of them? Look at it. I think Rodon's 3.66. I think Cortez is 3.56.
Yeah, how about Nestor?
Nestor's like...
Over his last two starts, yeah.
Everyone's
so concerned about Nestor, and no, he can't do this, he can't do that. He's been brilliant his last two starts.
And we still have Garrett Cole coming back.
Still have Garrett Cole coming back. Judge and Cole have been the team for years. Judge and Cole have been the team. Judge has done nothing, and Cole hasn't thrown a pitch, and they're eight games over 500. I don't know what we're complaining about. I don't know what any Yankee fan could possibly be complaining about. I heard a caller into Lori earlier in the show going on about Boone and his bullpen management. I wanted to jump through the phone and just start yelling. Like, it's just absolutely mind-boggling to me. The bullpen is ravaged by injuries. It's a completely new bullpen that he's getting to know. They bring in Ferguson in the 10th inning. They went 9 innings without scoring a run. And we're going to complain about the manager being forced to go to a guy in the bullpen that we don't trust. It's just, it boggles my mind. It boggles my mind. And in the same phone call, Lori says, well, Gonzalez was great today. And the guy goes, yeah, great, great, great. Does anybody acknowledge that Boone brought him in? Or do we only care about when Boone brings in the guy who gives up runs? Like, it just drives me nuts.
Hey, can I say one more thing
before
I go, Chris?
Of course, please.
Once again, like we said earlier, this is now draft week, correct?
Yes.
Thursday is the draft.
Thursday is going to be a big night, baby. We got the Knicks. We got the draft. The Islanders, is that another game that they shadow the Knicks? Mike, I think, do we have an Islander game as well on Thursday, or is that one of the games they're off? Thursday's the same. So we got Islanders. We got Knicks at the exact same time. Then we got the NFL draft. Thursday's a big night here.
Dear NFL draft, Jesus, please, for the love of our football New York Giants.
Where are we going?
Can they get a quarterback?
Yes! Amen. Kevin, you are 3 for 3, baby. You have done a wonder. I just want to let you know. You have, never mind the fact that you're the only person calling. You have done an incredible job. I want to thank you, Kevin. I want to thank you because you've nailed everything. Knicks are awesome. Aaron Judge is great, and people who boo him are stupid. Nestor Cortez and the rotation have done a wonderful job. You didn't say anything, but you just agreed quietly to my rant about Aaron Boone. And now you've said the Giants need a quarterback. You even prayed for it. I love you, Kev. I love you.
Love you, too. Thanks for making my drive up the main safe and fun tonight.
Oh,
well,
thank
night.
You, man. Stay awake. Enjoy the evening or morning. That's my guy right there. Right. I'm writing that down. Kevin driving to Maine. That's my guy right there. 3 for 3. The trifecta. The Giants need a quarterback, people. I don't care. You can't be trading up and trading away draft assets. Of course you can. If it gets you a quarterback who trades your franchise, I'll trade anything. I will literally trade anything. We could talk about it. We'll get into it. I was hoping to get into it a little bit more as we get closer. But we can get into the NFL draft. Because, like, honestly, for the Knicks, I got a question too about the Knicks. Jeez, I'm losing it. Giants. Here's one question I have, and maybe I'm just over analyzing something. But how come the GM of the Patriots can come out and say we're open for business? Now I don't think many people necessarily say that, unless I'm missing something. Did every GM come out and say that? But the Patriots GM comes out and says, we're open for business. We'll trade up. We'll trade back. We'll obviously feel comfortable taking a pick. But we're open for business. We've got a lot of calls already. Like, that's literally what the GM of the Patriots said. And yet, nobody believes that they're trading. Like, it's almost like, well, the first three picks are quarterbacks. Maybe you could trade up to four with the Cardinals. I don't know. Did the GM not say, I'm missing out on, this is just me because I've read a lot of stories. I'm looking at stuff. Like, no, he said we're open for business. Those were the words out of his mouth, and nobody cares. They're taking a quarterback. That's it. Okay, so we'll see. But if I'm the Giants, I'm looking to see if he's open for business. Yes, I'm looking to trade up to the Cardinals. And I know Minnesota's looking to trade up, and they have multiple first-round picks. The Giants have the ability of offering the sixth overall pick. You could trade back, get more picks, and then still probably, if you're not looking to draft a quarterback, draft the same player you were going to draft anyway. If you trade back to Minnesota, you can't guarantee yourself that. You won't get that. There's a chance you could get more picks and still pick the exact same player you were going to pick it for. I would think that's enticing to the Cardinals, especially with these three wide receivers. You guarantee yourself one of the three wide receivers if you trade back to six, assuming all four picks then would be quarterbacks. Even if only three of the picks, you're still guaranteed one of the three that everybody considers a no-brainer, absolute stud number one wide receiver. That's what the Giants need to do. That's what they need to do. They can't move forward with Daniel Jones. Now, what happens next year, I don't know. Is there a quarterback in the draft next year? Sure, there'll be a quarterback in the draft next year, right? It's not considered as heavy a draft as this one. But are there guys who will pop up? Of course. Going into the year, I don't think Jaden Daniels was going to be the second overall pick. Obviously, Joe Burrow wasn't going to be the number one pick. Like, there are guys who pop up. There's the Williams, who you knew was going to be the first overall pick forever. There's the Trevor Lawrence, you knew was going to be the first overall pick forever. There's the Lux, where you knew was going to be the first overall pick forever. And then there's guys who pop up. So there's probably names right now that we're not considering who are going to be top of the draft quarterbacks next year that everybody's telling you or can't miss. But here's the problem. I don't know where the Giants are going to be drafting next year. I don't know. Playing a weaker schedule because they didn't make the playoffs last year and didn't finish in second or third place because they'd be playing a lower schedule. They might win some games. If Daniel Jones is healthy and they block better, I don't think as much as I need to move on from him because of injuries and ineffectiveness over these last few years, I don't think he's terrible. And he did lead them to the playoffs and a playoff win. They might win some games. I don't think it'll be enough to really contend in the NFC, but they might win some games. I don't know where the Giants are going to be next year. I know where they are now, and I know who they have now. And I know their coach and their GM are built for this. And I know the draft is full of quarterbacks. I just don't understand it. I don't understand anything other than that. Now, if you don't want to give up draft equity and you're going to hold out and see if the quarterback falls to you at six, and if not, you take the wide receiver, so be it. I don't know. Or the asking price to move up to the third or fourth pick is just so severe, you can't imagine it. I'm not in the room. I'm not taking the phone calls. I'll take their word for it. But for me, heading into this thing on Thursday, the New York Giants have to try like hell to move up to the third or fourth spot and take their guy. That's what I would do. I want to make sure I get my guy. I'm willing to trade draft picks. I'm willing to trade anything. Because being right on the quarterback changes your franchise more than drafting another offensive lineman or drafting an outside linebacker or drafting a safety or drafting whatever else that you might not, instead of giving up next year's first round or a couple of second round picks. Yes, you need to fill out this roster. And the roster is not one piece away. Totally agree. And the best way to fill up your roster is through the draft. Totally get it. But having a stud franchise quarterback affords you to spend more money. It makes those draft picks better because they're playing with a big-time quarterback. It makes your offensive line better. And maybe you don't have as many holes to fill when you have a franchise, young, talented quarterback leading you. Maybe the holes either become smaller or easier to fill. Oh, and by the way, you can win a hell of a lot more games. Peter in Lawrence. What's up, Pete?
What's up, Chris?
How we doing,
you
buddy?
Correctamundo.
Oh, that is. I'm always correctamundo.
Let's put it this way: they need a quarterback more than they need anything.
No,
the Giants.
That's what I listen. The Giants have too many holes. The Giants have holes everywhere. They do. The number one place being the quarterback, and until you fill that one, there's really no point in filling the other ones.
Let's talk about the Mets. Are you satisfied with how they have done so far this year? Severino, 2-1.
Yes.
2.14 ERA.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty good for someone who, some people who said he was washed up.
Yeah, no. I mean, I think everyone thought he had the arm strength and still had the talent, but he's just been, and I wouldn't go crazy about him just yet because he's been unable to stay healthy. But yes, true. No, he's been excellent. No doubt about it. He's been excellent.
And I would like to wish my niece, Alexandra, a happy 28th birthday.
Happy 28th birthday to Alexandra.
My joy, my pride, my tax write-off.
That's very well put.
It's a joke.
I understand. I appreciate it. But yes, listen,
nice
the pitching.
And
you
go
got it, buddy.
And do not boo Aaron Judge.
That's right. Do not boo Aaron Judge, you morons. Thrilled. Am I satisfied with the Mets? Yeah, I'd say I'm satisfied with the Mets. They started out 0-5. They're 12-9. They haven't lost a series since. They've been great. I mean, you've had great storylines. I mean, Buto in this, you know, Buto pitched really well the other day too, even though, you know, he struggled early, but he gets the big out in the first inning when you thought the game could have got out of control real early. He settles in. He doesn't give you a lot of length, but he settles in. He's a young kid. I thought against that lineup, that's a good performance from Buto. The starting pitching's been great. Starting pitching's been really good. I know Hauser got beat up a little bit. Eventually, you're going to, you know, they had a terrible homestand. Eventually, the Dodgers are going to make someone pay. And plus, Glasnow was brilliant. But I mean, if you look at this rotation, the bullpen, I mean, Reed Garrett is becoming a thing. He gets his first save. He's been incredible. You know how good Diaz has been or is? I mean, they've done a really, really nice job pitching. It's far better than I would have expected. Am I satisfied? I'm beyond satisfied. Lindor's coming around. The only issue is you're going to deal with a couple injuries here. As Raley, who's been an excellent part of that bullpen, thankfully has no structural damage with his elbow, but he's going to be out for a little bit. Hopefully it's just the 2 weeks. That's what they're talking. And then Alvarez, who, you know, tore a ligament in his thumb and is going to be out 6 to 8 weeks. And that's probably on the short side of what you thought it could have been. And it's frustrating if it happens the way it happens, where he tries to brace himself while slipping around the bases. But, you know, Thomas Nido is a nice defensive player. All right. Sometimes I hear him talked about like he's an elite defensive player. I don't know if from what I've seen, I wouldn't call him elite, but he's good. He's a solid defensive catcher, no doubt about it. He's terrible offensively. And, you know, Nevarez is a solid backup and could probably be a starter in the league somewhere else. So, I mean, it's not a terrible catching duo, but it's not so much about that. It's about what you're hoping Alvarez, who got off to a great start and was really only the one of the few guys who showed up to start the year. He's been slumping since a little bit. But you were hoping to see him solidify his rookie season, have a really nice year, be a force in the middle of that lineup, and just come into his own. And now if it's 2 months, it's not the end of the world. You know, say he misses, let's just call it May and June. Say he's back for July. If he's back July 1 and he's got July, August, September, plus hopefully, you know, into the playoffs, it's enough. And it's not going to kill you. I don't think it's going to kill you. Especially, hopefully, if J.D. Martinez ever comes back, he's going to go to Syracuse and get some games in, and hopefully he's going to be a player for the Mets on Friday is what they're anticipating. Now, that's the one thing it does do, too. It now really enforces the idea. I know Stewart's been good. I know Taylor. But, you know, J.D. Martinez is going to have to come here, and, you know, they're missing a big right-handed bat in the middle of the lineup now. So J.D. Martinez is going to have a little bit more, I don't want to say pressure, and plus he's a veteran. I don't think it's going to make a major difference. But now the Mets need him to get right back if it's Friday, which I'll still have my fingers crossed. But if it's Friday, now he's got to come in and start hitting. But no, this Mets team's been great. I mean, I don't know what else to say. They're tough. What I love about them too is if you watch, whenever they fall behind or whenever they give up runs, they come right back. Like they respond almost immediately a lot. Like if you watch, they are very rarely behind multiple innings. They've done a really nice job of coming right back and attacking. And Marte's been great. The big home run the other day. Obviously, Lindor starting to come out of it, even left-handed. You could take a breath with Lindor a little bit. And, I mean, they've just done an incredible job. They're on this, you know, they're on this unbelievable win streak. They've taken all these series. They haven't lost a series since that Detroit series. And they just took it to... Now, look, the Dodgers aren't playing their best baseball right now. The bottom of that, you want to talk about the bottom of the Yankees lineup. The bottom of the Dodger lineup sucks. And they're very top-heavy. And Yamamoto really hasn't gotten off to a good start to his Major League career. And they're not playing great baseball right now. They had a bad homestand, losing both series. But still, you go into L.A. and you take on that lineup. You take on the top. You take on Mookie Betts, Ohtani, and obviously Met killer Freddie Freeman. And you pitch the way they pitched. And you take two out of three. And you come back every time there's any kind of deficit, and your young pitchers figure out a way to get out of a first inning jam, and you know everything else goes with it. You bring in, we've seen now the manager be willing to do what Buck did with Diaz 2 years ago, and you bring him in the eighth inning to get through a tough part of the order and get you out of the big jam in the game, and then you have someone like Reed Garrett who can come in and close games. Reed Garrett's been arguably the best reliever in all of baseball. He's been incredible. He's one hell of a story here for the Mets. How do you not like what the Mets are doing? Satisfied? I am more than satisfied. As a Met fan right now, I think a couple of things that jump out at you are the offense is resilient. The pitching staff is far better than you even could have hoped for. Let's be honest. You're still waiting for your ace to come back, Senga. Hopefully that's the first week of June, let's say. But the rotation's been good. The bottom of the lineup and your bench players have been great. Hopefully now some of your stars are starting to wake up. But for me, the grittiness, the toughness was a question the first week of the season. It goes back to years ago when they wouldn't ever throw at anybody. There was a question about the toughness of this team. There was questions about the resiliency of this team. And man, I mean, those two things have been answered in quick order. They are resilient. They are tough. They battle back. Even in their losses, they come back. They, for the most part, I know they got blown out 10-0 yesterday. But I mean, even in their losses, they find a way to come back. They make everything close. Bottom of the lineup and your bench players are putting good at-bats together. I mean, the bullpen's been great. The starting rotation's been far better than you would have thought. I mean, the Mets right now are playing great baseball. They're as good looking through the rest of the, you know, when you consider the injuries to the rotation that Atlanta had, and you think about, you know, the way the Dodgers have played lately. I mean, you look around the National League, the Brewers are off to a good start. The Cubs have played well. But Philadelphia's, you know, has won six in a row, so they've been hot here. But the Mets, right now, you're getting J.D. Martinez back on Friday, so you hope he's a big bat in the middle of the lineup. Eventually, you get back another ace pitcher. And I could see them doing something. I mean, at the trade deadline, if they're playing this well, you almost have to. You can't afford. Now, I understand, like, that's going to be a very interesting key to me for this Mets season. I don't want to fast forward ahead. You know, we've seen June swoons before, but I like the way this team is playing. I have confidence in this team. They are getting JD Martinez back, but if they get to like July and they're playing well and they're in the mix, they're two games out behind the Braves, they're 2.5 right now. Say they're 2-3 games behind the Braves, they're in the wild card mix. They've played well, and it's clearly they could use another starter, or it's clear they could use another bat. What do they do? Because we could all argue about what the plan was and whether Vientos was part of it, or, you know, like I was getting yelled at because I was talking about Vientos, or whatever the case may be. The plan is certainly to accrue young assets, not to trade them away for rentals to improve this team. Whatever you thought the plan was heading in, whether how much you thought they were actually trying to win this year and whether you liked the signings and you would battle back against people like me who told you they didn't do enough in the year, that's fine. But moving forward at the trade deadline, you can't argue the plan isn't to trade away prospects. Will they make trade? And if you want a significant piece, look at what's gone on in the trade deadlines here. You're not going to get a significant piece to help you, not a significant one. You might get a bat. You might get an arm. But you are not going to get a game-changing bat, a middle-of-the-order bat, a game-changing first or two starting pitcher without trading away real assets. And if this team proves that they are worthy of that investment, if this team has shown you guts and guile and the ability to bounce back, and the bullpen is strong with Reed Garrett and Diaz at the back end of it, and you feel like, Dave, you've got an opportunity against the Braves team that lost their best starting pitcher, against the Dodgers team that right now is 13-11. I expect them to do, you know, much better than that, but who knows? The bottom of that order has been awful. If you find yourself in a position where, hey, I'm right there to be one of the better teams in the National League, how do you pass up on that? And that's not part of the plan. But that's looking ahead. Right now, the Mets are one of the hotter teams in baseball. There's no doubt about it. They've scored a ton of runs recently. Their bullpen, especially at the back end, has been great. They've been tough. The bench players are playing well. And Lindor's starting to wake up. The Alvarez loss is tough. The Raley loss is tough. But I see no reason why they shouldn't go into San Francisco and beat an under 500 team and win another series.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
David Wells has pitched a perfect game. 27 up, 27 down. Baseball immortality for David Wells. And the Yankees win. The Yankees win.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the Free Odyssey app.
Yeah, you heard John Sterling in that promo. It's the only promos we do, which is cool. He deserves it. Unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to see much of the ceremony. I didn't really see it all live. I was on the baseball field with the boys trying to figure out how to be two places at one time, both games at the same time. But I was cool with that. It was originally 12:30 and 5. And I would have been on the field for the start of the Knick game. So I was happy to have that other game moved back to 12:30. But it did split me up. I went to my little guy's T-ball game for a while. And then I had to go. And it's awkward because I'm kind of a coach for both teams. So it's like I'm leaving one behind. But the little guy's games go quicker. So I knew I'd catch the second half if I did. It doesn't matter. My point is I didn't see the John Sterling thing. I know the Yankees are getting some flack for giving him a television, an 83-inch television. Here's the thing. These gifts, right, are never really, like, did you expect them to, like, roll out a Maserati? Like, these gifts aren't these big. He talked about openly that he loves to watch the games and he has the big TV room and everything. So they bought him a nice TV. It's just a nice little gesture. I'm sure they're taking care. You know, he's been there forever. Like I don't know what you expect them to wheel out. Like when they had Mariano, it's like a plaque. It's this. Like it's not these big, grandiose gifts. Like, you know, Bob Barker is in there. They go, a brand new car.
They also had, remember, like when Mariano retired, yeah. when Jeter retired,
yeah.
they had almost a year to get ready.
Right.
They had a couple days to get a gift for John. So
yeah.
they gave him a practical thing that he's not going to set it up. Somebody else is going to set it up for him.
Yeah.
He talked about how what he's going to do with his free time
yeah.
is watch all the Yankees games and watch the Mets and watch all the other baseball games yeah. that are on national TV.
That's what he talked
and
about.
And like, we know he's going to be into the NBA playoffs. That's what he's going to do. So they gave him one of the best TVs in the world to do it on
yeah.
from his home in Edgewater.
That's it. Is that all he gets? Like,
he's one day going to get a plaque in Monument Park.
Yeah.
They also gave him the little thing with the microphone that Kay presented to him.
Right. And they got the plaque in the booth, which was very nice. I'm sure they've named it the John Sterling broadcast booth.
Right. And like you joked, like, what are they going to give him, a car? What do you think John Sterling in his mid 80s is going to use more?
Yeah.
The TV or
right.
anything else?
A trip to Italy? Like, what? I don't understand. Like, that's it. I'm sure he'll, you know, have whatever he wants, but like, and I'm sure he's going to get a nice pack. I don't know. But like that, those gifts on the last day, like, I remember like all the, like, I don't know what we expect. They had everybody there. Bernie makes a video. Jeter makes a video. O'Neill makes a video. I heard, I didn't see that Tino was there. Like, they had a great day to celebrate him and gave him an 83-inch TV. What did they got to give him?
That is, I've seen so many people criticize the gift, but not one person has had an idea of, but what, give him this instead.
Yeah. No, it's just criticizing the gift. It's, you got to, listen, Hal's cheap, and you got to figure this is an excuse to do it. I actually saw one of the, this guy who, like, I forget his name, I got to look back, but he kills WFAN every time. I see him, he says he covers the Mets for Twitter, I don't know. But he kills WFAN.
For Twitter?
That's what he says, yeah, it's like a spoof, like, thing, I guess, you know. Or X, I think. He kills the fan and host and all that stuff. And he's constantly on the, but yet he has the shtick of Juan Soto. And I saw him tweet, Yankee fans see, you know, the Yankees give John Sterling an 80-inch TV and they think they're going to sign Juan Soto. Like, you guys are stupid. Like, what do you, I just don't understand what you expect to give him.
I mean, a year ago, the Yankees had handed out the biggest contract ever to a pitcher, for sure. And maybe the biggest one to a hitter also with Aaron Judge.
Yeah.
I know the Dodgers just topped him, but.
Right.
I mean, still a year ago, and
Mike,
you
cheap,
know, I don't need
and
to
they'll
tell
never
you.
Do. They're cheap. Brian Cashman's a dope. They're cheap. That's just it. Brian Cashman ruined the Yankees. I got the Brian Cashman blows guy hitting me up constantly. Brian Cashman ruined the Yankees. He literally ruined the Yankees, and he still has a job. He ruined the Yankees. He ruined them.
Think about how much better they could be than 15-7 without Brian Cashman.
Know. No, he ruined them.
Think about how much better
they'd
be
bullpen, yeah.
with a closer not named Clay Holmes and, you know, his zero blown saves.
That's another one. I did. I don't. You weren't here on Friday.
I saw. Well, because we've had the conversation off air, and I did see it on Twitter that you talked about it on Friday.
Yeah, I did a whole thing on Clay Holmes. I mean, still, there's no way we can win a championship with Clay Holmes. The guy's perfect. The guy's literally perfect. No, he's given up a couple hits. He's had a guy on. I mean, we act like, did you see Mariano? It wasn't always 1-2-3, even the great Mariano. Sometimes it gets a little hairy.
And Mariano also blew playoff games.
I said it too.
And that's who he's compared to, because if you're complaining about Clay Holmes, who around baseball is it that you want?
No, haters are off to a terrible start. Obviously, a bunch of the guy in Pittsburgh is off to a terrible start. Like, we've seen some of the Bednar, some of the best closers in baseball. I mean, Clay Holmes has been great. He hasn't given up a run. Did the defense help him out on an outing or two? Sure. But that's part of it. The defense hurts him sometimes, too. Defense dropped a pop-up. We got lucky that they were able to get a force at third base for him. Like, it happens. It comes and goes. The guy's been brilliant.
I'm also convinced all the people who love Hader forget that 2 years ago, he was almost unusable.
Yeah, after he got traded.
And miraculously, he
found out
in the postseason.
Yeah.
But in the regular season, he was horrible.
He was horrible. He got traded to San Diego, and he was terrible when he first got traded there. I mean, it's just the nature of closers, but it's unbelievable to me how many Yankee fans constantly We'll never win with Clay Holmes. Got to figure out a closer. Can't win with Clay Holmes. The guy hasn't given up a run.
Listen, if you think back to all those playoff games that Clay Holmes blew, you'll be done pretty quickly because there aren't examples of that.
That is absolutely true. The offense doesn't score. And and the offense scares me. They've been shut out three times already. I think that's tied for fourth or fifth in Major League Baseball already. But here's the issue with the Yankee offense. Aaron Judge. It's that simple. Aaron Judge is the best hitter in baseball, and he's paid as such. He's the driving force for this Yankee offense for years. If he's going to do nothing, and that's what he's done. I know he came through with the hit with the bases loaded the other day and won the game. He's done nothing. He's in an absolute funk. How good can this offense be with Aaron Judge doing nothing? I understand there's still issues. Gleyber Torres hasn't gotten going. Verdugo's starting to turn it on now. He's been better the last, 10 games or so. Volpe's gone back into a slump. Still waiting on DJ LeMahieu. The catchers really haven't hit either one of them. Up and down the lineup, too many bad at-bats, too many easy outs. They've been shut out a couple times. This offense is predicated on 2-3 being Juan Soto. And that's the other thing. I'm not changing a damn thing. I'm not. A lot of people are talking about changing Soto and Judge. Why would I do that? Why would I mess around with Soto and Judge? Soto's off to a great start. Aaron Judge will find himself. I'm not messing with it. It's just starting, and they're winning. They're winning. How good could you expect this offense to be with Judge being a zero? A zero. Think of all the times he's come up with runners on. This season's different if Judge is hitting the way Judge typically hits. He's off to a bad start. The offense has not been as good as it could be. They still have the second best record in the American League, and they're in first place in their division. A division, by the way, that is the only division in all of baseball that doesn't have a single team under 500. It's a tough division. Man, the Yankees are going to be fine. The offense is going to be fine. Judge is going to be fine. The starting pitch has been great. I mean, honestly, that loss the other day, the biggest take out of that game for me is not that they lost to Tampa. It's not the offense didn't score runs. It's certainly not that Boone brought in Ferguson. It's seven shutout innings from Nestor Cortez. That is the biggest storyline of that game. We don't focus on it because they lost, and I understand we want to win the game. The biggest storyline coming out of that game is Nestor Cortez, not against some lousy team that you can brush it off, not for four innings, not for five innings, not once or twice through the lineup, against the Tampa Bay Rays, a divisional rival, and a team that's perennially a American League playoff team. He went seven shutout innings. That's the storyline of that game. That's the biggest thing to come out of that game because they need him to be that pitcher. The offense will come around. The judge has done absolutely nothing. I don't know what you expect the offense to be. Jordan and Baldwin. What's up, Jordan?
Good. How are you doing?
Good, buddy. How are you?
No, I'm not bad. I was listening to what you were saying about John Sterling. And I thought that was funny. But I'm glad you brought around the judge and the offensive struggle because, I mean, listen, I agree with you that he's going to come through, but, you know, we're almost through April and he hasn't been looking good. And he's just swinging at pitches that he has been making contact with in the past. He looks like he's further back in the zone. His stance is just the same, but I don't want it to get tweaked because when you start messing around with a swing like that, you can really break it. I hope he hits his stride. Thank God for Soto. I really don't know what it is with him because it looks very unlike him, but thank God the pitching is coming around.
Yeah, I mean, he's struggling. I don't know. I mean, I say this a lot. I'm smart enough to know what I don't know. And who the hell am I? I find it funny. And I know you didn't really do it, but the callers do it. We do it. Like, move up in the zone. Why does he have his foot back? Like, he's Aaron Judge, and they have hitting coaches, and he's the best hitter in baseball for the last 3 years. I'm not going to tell him he's too far away from the plate. I'm not going to tell him he doesn't have his hands in the right position. We could look at video and say, well, this is where he was last year, and this is where he is this year. I get that. But here's the point. He's Aaron Judge. He's struggling. This is not the first time Aaron Judge has had a terrible 3 weeks. I promise you it's not. It's just it's to start the year. It's a stark contrast of what Soto has done and what he's doing. And it's just whenever it's to start the year in particular, we pay attention to it because it's all we have.
Yeah.
And his numbers are so you look up and he's hitting 160. If he has a 160 stretch over 3 weeks in the middle of July, it moves his batting average from 295 to 285, and we don't care that much.
Yeah, you're right. I also have one more question, just like a little hypothetical. So with Soto going on this hot stretch he's going on right now, and presumably he keeps going, and you know, presumably the team stays hot, and we'll get into October, and we're going to playoff baseball, and he is like an AL MVP candidate. What do you think the contract's going to look like? What do you think he's going to want? And do you think the Yankees are going to be in pain? Do you think they're going to be the top competitor, or do you think they're going to be willing to match an offer, if not match, go more than an offer? What do you think the number is? And have a good morning, I guess.
All right, well, thank you. You too, Jordan. I don't think they'll have to go over. I don't think there's going to be a Yankee tax. I don't think necessarily there's going to be a home discount, but I don't think they'll have to go over. I would think with what's going on and how he's playing and how he feels and the connection to the fan base already, I would think matching is enough. So to say go over, I don't think there's a need to go over. Any offer. But yeah, I mean, the contract is creeping up to $600 million. That's what it is. It's going to be close to $600 million. Because of his age and because of how damn good he is, it's going and because of the amount of teams that are going to want him, but mainly his age, it's going to be close to $600 million. I would think he's happy here. He's going to Ranger games. Apparently, he left the clubhouse today in a Panera jersey. They were at the game. They were at the Knick game the other night. I mean, I would think he's loving it here. He's hanging out with Jason Bateman, big hairy Jason Bateman. Looks like he did in Teen Wolf 2. That's a classic movie. Did you ever see? The people don't even know it, but Jason Bateman was the main character of Teen Wolf 2, where he played like a cousin of the original with Marty McFly,
Michael J. Fox,
Michael J. Fox,
and it's Teen Wolf 2, T-O-O. Like he's a Teen Wolf also
Teen Wolf 2,
not the number 2,
and the sport isn't basketball but boxing. He's a boxer for a college. It is an atrocious film. And I saw Jason Bateman do a podcast, I think it was with Howard Stern, or an interview with Howard Stern, talking about how it set back his career, how bad Teen Wolf 2 was.
I don't know if you listen to Smartless. I listened to that with him, Will Arnett, and Sean Hayes.
I've heard it,
and,
but I don't listen to it.
I mean, there are three great friends who like get on each other for everything. Like,
yeah,
they
sure.
mock each other for everything.
Yeah.
And it constantly comes up. I mean, Will Arnett especially makes fun of Teen Wolf 2.
All the time. Does he really? Yeah. I mean, it's really bad. There's like a dance sequence. It's just at a party, you know, when he's the wolf and he shows up, you know, that swag of the wolf. It's in the first one too. But like, yeah, I can mash potato. It's just so bad. It's such a bad movie.
And he can laugh about it now because his career turned out all
right. His career turned out all right. But he's got the long hair. He's got the beard. He's taking pictures of Juan Soto and Gleyber Torres and the rest of the guys. I'm sure Juan Soto's thrilled to be here.
I remember thinking about Jason Bateman on Friday night because they were talking. He somehow, or maybe it was Saturday early in the game, he came up on the SNY broadcast, and he's a big Dodgers fan. So I thought, oh, maybe we'll see him at the Mets-Dodgers game. But no, he's at the Garden for both games.
He's at the Garden for both games. Yeah. How about that? But Juan Soto's there. I mean, yeah, the contract's going to be, I think there's no doubt. I'm sorry. I just think there's no doubt the Yankees are going to be there. Now, I can't tell you they'll be the highest bidder. Because we just don't know. And if Steve Cohen has his mind set to it, he's going to be able to offer more money. He has more money. But I would think the Yankees will come up to a offer that is close enough where if Juan Soto wants to stay a Yankee, he will. But we'll see. We'll see. I'm not worried about that. I don't even want to answer that question because Juan Soto is a Yankee right now. I don't care about next year. I don't care about his contract. He's a Yankee right now. They're leading the division. I'm trying to win a World Series. Then I'll worry about it. Like, I really don't care. And any Met fan who does, even worse. You guys are the hottest, arguably the hottest team in baseball. You care about stealing Juan Soto. Stealing Juan Soto is to stick it to the Yankee fan when you've got nothing else. You've got one of the hottest teams in baseball. You've got a team that hasn't lost a series since the opening week. You got a team that just went into L.A. and took 2 out of 3 against the Dodgers, the superpowered Dodgers. Juan Soto is a Yankee, and I love every second of it. 877-337-6666. But I do think we need to realize how important Aaron Judge is. And I love when people say, you know, Soto transformed the team. Did you watch 22? Because while Judge was hitting 62 home runs, he pretty much transformed the team. But right now, yeah, it feels like if Juan Soto doesn't do it, nobody is. But it's still pretty damn good as they are 8 games over .500 and a half a game up on those Baltimore Orioles, who their number one prospect is off to a miserable start to his career.